Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 113. Happy June. How are you, Dave?
I'm getting along. A few more trips to the doctor, a few more tune-ups, and I think I might be straight, or as straight as I could possibly be for what's going on with me.
Give us a little color. I mean, I know we've talked a little bit about the Vegas Knights and what's going on out there. Is it palpable? Look, I know you're not walking around the streets on a minute-to-minute basis, but how excited? You know, we know how excited Pittsburgh gets. You know, the past couple of years with the Pens in the Stanley Cup Finals. Is it crazy in Vegas?
It is absolutely crazy. You know, I mean, outside of just Vegas being Vegas, it is when it comes to the Knights. This team, the city really has embraced this team. And, of course, all this dates back to 1 October and, of course, the shooting and all like that. And then, you know, the Knights, you know, the Vegas strong and, you know, obviously winning at the top of the season really got the synergy started. And yeah, I mean, in fact, I don't know if you've seen the kind of the new commercials, but really, you know, it used to be what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And now they're kind of switching, you know, they kind of have a new, I guess, campaign where we're Vegas, where the impossible happens. So, yeah, look, regardless of what happens the rest of this series, and I'm not very optimistic, and you probably are not either, but it's been an incredible inaugural season, and it should, you know, carry over for a few seasons to come here, and you know, we'll see if they can keep it going, and we'll now see if they can win. You know, you got to win one game at a time. You can't win three games in one game. So,
right.
winning back at home on when is it Thursday night will be key. And you know, I think the biggest thing is just don't let them celebrate the cup on your own ice.
Yeah, although you know the Penguins have never celebrated it on home ice, so you know it's the way it goes. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, it's been a storybook season, and one of the, you know, it'll go down in NHL lore. You know, why I think people forget. You know, when we haven't had NFL expansion in a long time, but when Jacksonville and Carolina came into the NFL, I think it was the second year for both of them. They made the conference championship game, and. You know, pretty impressive to be that successful that quickly. And it's obviously, you know, there are two ways to look at it. One is for the new city that's got a franchise, you expect to have initial buzz. You try to pick a city that's going to support its team. So you kind of assume that's going to be there. But to have, you know, early success obviously is crucial to build a, you know, long-term, viable fan base. And obviously, I've always felt like sports teams would do great in Vegas, and there was this view that it wouldn't because it's a transient population. You know, tourists aren't going to go to all the games. You know what? Tourists would go to all the games. It's certainly in the NFL. It's a joke. There will never be an open ticket in Vegas because people go to Vegas and we've talked about this before. Can you imagine the first time the Steelers play the Raiders in Vegas? There's going to be 70,000 Steeler fans, you know, paying $300 for a ticket to go to that game.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I mean, it's hard to meet someone in Vegas who's actually from Vegas.
Right, right.
You know, but coming across a true native Vegan is kind of rare, at least you know in the short time that I've been out here. But you know, talking about the Raiders and them coming, you know, you can't go anywhere without seeing Raiders gear, even in the Walmarts and stuff like that. Now, obviously, they're smartly doing it. It doesn't have Oakland attached to it. It's just Raiders and the logo. But, yeah, I mean, there's already quite a bit of buzz, and we're still a few seasons away from that actually happening. And the progress on the stadium, I haven't driven by it, but I've seen pictures and all like that. You know, it's coming right along. So, yeah, I'm pretty geeked. To see that as well. You're going to have to come out for that first Steelers-Raiders game in Vegas.
I have no doubt that I will be there for that, barring, unforeseen circumstances.
Great.
All right, what do we got?
Well, I guess we should start with a little bit of housekeeping here. We'll go over a few roster moves that the Steelers made yesterday. Yesterday being Monday, the Steelers placed tight end Jake McGee and tackle Gerald Hawkins on IR as a result of the injuries that they had suffered last week during the OTA practices, and signed to the 90-man roster were free agent tackle Bryce Harris, who's bounced around a little bit, and a somewhat familiar name, Ryan Malik, tight end out of Virginia Tech, who spent some time, I think, last season with the Steelers, but was cut by May, never even made it to training camp with them. So two in, two out, and I think the most notable, and look, injuries are going to happen. That's just part of things, Don. I think the thing that, Alex and I were talking about how the team was likely going to have to handle these transactions on this last show, and I forgot, and an important lesson, for me at least, who I love the CBA, I love the bylaws and things like that. I didn't pay close enough attention to those back in March when the owners meeting was going on. But per a new bylaw that I think was suggested by the Miami Dolphins, teams can now move players with serious injury, players with who are not vested, meaning 4 years or less. Teams can now move those players to IR as long as they have major injuries without having to expose them to the waiver process. So in the case of the players in the Steelers' case, McGee and Gerald Hawkins, both those guys were obviously not yet vested. The Steelers did not have to expose them to waive them injured, have them clear. Now, it's not such a big deal with Jake McGee because, let's face it, if you waived him injured right now to get him to IR, is there going to be a team that's going to claim him off waivers with a torn Achilles? And the answer to that's probably no.
Clearly no. And it's the same with Hawkins.
Well, Hawkins, you can make an argument, former fourth round draft pick, still has another year on his contract. Yes, the odds of that happening are probably slim, but at least
I can only remember one guy ever, and it was there was a big name that the Patriots claimed, right? Somebody, was it a tight end?
Yeah, was it Ballard?
It was Ballard. From the Giants, right? They claimed him, and he didn't end up actually playing for him. I don't think he ever made it back. But it's the one time we've seen it happen where it was a starter goes down. The Giants, want the extra roster spot. They expose him. I think the Patriots claimed him, and I don't think he ever came back. But I'm going straight on memory. I mean, that's the only time I ever think I remember that happening.
I seem to remember once. I want to remember one since then, but I can't put my finger on it. But I mean, regardless, you don't.
It's a good rule not to have to do that.
Right, right. And the key thing there in the bylaws is it has to be considered a major injury. Okay, so whatever. Not a hamstring injury or anything like that. So, the big thing is here is you don't have to carry Hawkins for the rest of the offseason and tie up a 90-man roster just to get to the final cut-down date and place him on IR. Now, one thing that still has me kind of befuddled was the fact that the Steelers, several weeks ago, I think right at the beginning of May, were able to immediately place Ryan Shazier on the reserve PUP list, and I cannot for the life of me ever remember a move to the reserve PUP list that early in the offseason, and it makes me wonder if this new bylaw afforded the Steelers the opportunity to do that. So I'm still trying to clarify that. But another thing, and if I'm reading the bylaws right, is the Steelers, as far as vested players go, can now move a vested player with a major or minor injury to IR prior to the final 53-man roster cutdown date. Remember, they did away with the 75 cutdown date. What was it, last year or the year before? So what that meant is, if you had an injured player on your roster and you wanted to get him to IR, you had to wait until the final cutdown day to make it. Now, obviously, if you had a guy that you wanted to get to IR with the designated to return classification, you obviously had that player has to still be on your initial 53-man roster, and then prior to the week one game, you could put him on IR with hopes that he will be designated to return later. So I shame on me for missing this bylaw rule, and I know, you know, probably 80% of our listeners could give a rat's behind about it. But, you know, it is a good bylaw change, I think. And now teams will have, you know, can carry a full 90-man roster throughout really the all off season. So I thought that was worth getting to today. Now we'll wait and see the split contracts on guys like McGee and Hawkins, and, you know, if the Steelers save any cap room there. If they do, it's not going to be much, but I'll write that up when the appropriate time comes. But, you know, I thought that would be a couple of good topics to start the show with here.
We talked about, you and I talked about Hawkins a week ago, and, you know, Chooks being drafted in the third round, you know, put Hawkins on notice. And we talked about Filer and his versatility and what that meant, you know, maybe for Hawkins, probably, you know, still, look, he played, I think, 15 snaps toward the end of the season, had the inside track to take over the Chris Hubbard role as the swing tackle and, you know, jumbo package type of guy. Obviously that's not happening. And you have to, I'm skeptical that Gerald Hawkins will ever wear a Steeler uniform for a game again.
Yeah, and you're right to be skeptical about that. I mean, he had his rookie season wiped out by a shoulder injury. You know, last season he played very, very sparingly, and then now his third season wiped out by a quad injury, and. Next year, 2019 will be the final year of his rookie contract, and with Okafor now in the picture here, and people hate it when I say his name now. Hopefully, I'm saying it right now, but
Okafor, isn't it?
Okafor. That's why they hate it. But we'll just keep calling him Chooks, I guess. But look, I mean, this is the guy that they are now hoping can be the swing tackle, and you know, Matt Filer has position versatility. Alex and I talked about Jake Rogers moving up in the pecking order in the last podcast, and now the new guy Bryce Harris will get a chance to compete as well too. So yeah, I mean, Hawkins, I mean, as a fourth round draft pick, you don't have a lot invested in him there. So he might not never put on a Steelers uniform during the regular season again. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, Jake McGee and Alex and I talked about this as well, too. This is a guy I thought really had a decent shot at making the roster this year.
A decent shot or a shot? On your 53, did you have him on the roster?
I think I did on my initial 53. I mean, look, you know, if you're keeping three tight ends, it's going to come down to him and Grimble. And I think Jake McGee is a better special teams player. And while we didn't see a lot of him last year during the preseason, boy, he sure was good on the move and good as a blocker.
He definitely did some good things in the preseason, no doubt.
So, you know, I think, I mean, not a huge loss, obviously. We're talking about a borderline number three tight end here. But, You know, I thought he had a decent shot. And now, look, that Achilles, that's nothing to play with either, right? I mean,
people talk about this. Guys come back from these injuries. I mean, there's not many injuries guys don't come back from. Yeah, look, you'd rather not have it than have it, of course. But, yeah, I mean, we saw Terrell Suggs, you know, came back in 5 months for the Ravens and played, you know, on the end. I mean, he's a young guy. He tore his Achilles. Guys tether Achilles all the time. And, you know, but same thing. I mean, he's missing a year of his career now, and it's not helping him. This was probably his best and last shot to make the team. He's not going to make the team.
Yeah, probably was. So, look, just keep your finger – the Steelers OTAs, last week of OTAs, obviously are underway now. They had a team building session, the annual team building session at Dave and Buster's on Monday. And I guess a perfect time to kind of segue here. I don't know if Antonio Brown was present for that Dave and Buster's team building session on Monday, but I do know that Antonio Brown had Festivus in June and the airing of the grievances on his social media account on Monday.
Fill me in. I'm unaware.
Yeah, he just he's been acting a little bit peculiar on social media the last couple of days, and we'll get into one thing that he posted on Twitter. I think it was Sunday, and then yesterday, you know kind of taking shots at, you know, Bruce Arians and his initial thoughts on Brown and Mike Tomlin and the two dogs and one bone thing. And he posted something about don't tell, you know, pee on my leg and tell me it's raining or something like that. And then, something about a female acquaintance on there. So it was kind of really erratic out of nowhere behavior by Brown on social media. Now, is this is this look, if this is the worst thing that happens for the Steelers this year, it'll be a good sign. But it was just kind of really erratic, you know, his behavior all of a sudden on his social media accounts. And, you know, we wrote about it on the site yesterday and all like that. You know, I don't think he was hacked. But, you know, my thoughts on this is, look, if you want to use some of this stuff as motivation, then go ahead. But frame it maybe a different way. And, my God, I mean, is there a reason to put, you know, some of your personal stuff with you know, your battles with a former trainer and dealings with female acquaintances? You know, leave all that kind of stuff, you know, to yourself.
Yeah, well, I leave him to himself. I mean, honest to God, it's just – what Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, I mean, they're obviously the two most notable names for the Steelers that are, I mean, I don't care what Le'Veon Bell sings or raps or whatever or posts. And I feel the same with Antonio Brown. And at some point, you know, even, you know, when I was doing the radio show on a daily basis, you know, it makes for fodder to talk about. It makes for fodder for us to talk about. But I mean, it's, you know, it's just, it's not, like you said, it's nonsense. I mean, it's whatever.
Yeah. You know, you just look, I mean, all, you know, all the stuff that the Steelers have had, you know, it seems like year in, year out, you know, level of drama, this, that, and the other. It's just one thing with him being such a high profile player in the league and with the, you know, history of the drama that this team's had over the last several seasons. It's just something that's very easy to point to for, you know, major media and us bloggers to kind of, you know, create a story out of, if you will. So yeah, I'm not alarmed by it, you know, at all. You know, I'd rather him not do it. And like I said, if this is the worst thing that happens with the Steelers, you know, this season, God bless him and all. But one thing that he did post on the third, David, that I thought would be kind of fun to talk about. He tweeted, "Am I the best wide receiver in this generation? If I stop today, where would you rank me?"
Now, Antonio Brown did that?
Yes.
Somebody's telling him what to tweet, because I can't imagine he tweeted that on his own.
He did. He did. And there's been no sign. And this was before the Monday escapades.
He ranks first.
In this generation, what is this is generation 30 years, David? I mean,
No. Well, this is a great point because I argue about this all the time. People talk about, he's a generational talent, and they say it every year. They say it literally. They say it in some sport every year. Generational talents, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. Okay, so you can define, there were guys in there, Kobe, other great players for sure. But, we're talking probably, I think most people, not everybody's going to agree they were the two best players ever. I think, that's the other thing about Mario. I mean, Mario played while Wayne Gretzky played. They overlapped, so a decent part of their career. But, everybody talks about, it's such an overused term. So I think of it as 10 years. Now, it's not 10 years necessarily in the middle of the guy's career. Is it the first year of his career? Is it how do you define the 10 years? Is there a better wide receiver who's played in the game while Antonio Brown, who's overlapped the career of Antonio Brown? So the conversation would be Larry Fitzgerald is in the conversation. Calvin Johnson would be in the conversation. I'm not sure anybody else that jumps. Randy Moss must have. Did he overlap Antonio Brown on maybe a year?
He came into the league 1998 or 1999, Randy Moss, and when did he call it? Well, he's been out at least 5 years, right?
Yeah, he's been out, right? Yeah, I think he's been out 5 years, right? So he probably overlapped a year.
2012 was with the 49ers, right? It was geez, hard to believe he even played for the 49ers. 16 games with the 49ers in 2012, had 28 catches for 434 yards and 3 touchdowns. So technically, really, to be quite honest with you, Randy Moss' career span from 1998 through the 2009 season with the Patriots. He did play in 2010 with both the Patriots, the Vikings, and the Titans.
Yeah, so the answer is Randy Moss was the best receiver of his generation. So he gets those 10 years and the years. So he gets the aughts. And right now, Antonio Brown gets the teens, right?
Well, here's what I wrote up the other day. Since 2008, which is 2 years before Brown was even drafted by the Steelers, only two other NFL wide receivers, Larry Fitzgerald, 904 receptions, and Brandon Marshall, 837 receptions, have more receptions than Brown currently has. And that's 2 years before Brown even...
And what's he have? How many does he have?
900 and something... Right.
Well, you said Marshall's 831, and he has more. Sorry.
Oh, no. Wait. Since wait a minute. How many does Antonio Brown have? He has
733. Okay, so Brandon Marshall's been probably an underrated receiver, but he's never been on a good team. Right? I don't think he's ever been on a really good team. He's not going to go in that conversation. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but he's going to have put up really good numbers. Larry Fitzgerald's obviously going to be first ballot-ish type of guy.
Let me add on to that. Additionally, only Fitzgerald, 11,001. Marshall, 10,863. And Calvin Johnson, 10,581, have more receiving yardage than Brown. This dates back to 2008, have more receiving yardage than Brown at 9,910, dating back to 2008 when it comes to wide receivers. So
yeah, Calvin Johnson hasn't played the last 2 years, so pretty impressive. So to me, during Brown's career, the three people, that it came to mind right away, and I'm glad that you're verifying it, is, the argument would be Calvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald during his career. Randy Moss, gets it on the time. Randy Moss beats out Dez. I don't think Dez is in the conversation. Maybe Dez is in the conversation. I don't know. Maybe Dez should be in the conversation. And Terrell Owens, I guess, is in the conversation with Moss. I think Moss takes that.
Where does Harrison rank? Marvin Harrison with, he kind of overlapped both careers, right?
Yeah, I think he had to be right on Randy Moss's timeline, right? He was 98 to 2010 kind of guy. 2012.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. He's more into Randy Moss, Terrell Owens.
Yeah, so I'd put Moss over those two guys, and you can make an argument. If somebody said right now that Larry Fitzgerald, because of the longevity of what 13 years or 12 years, however many years he's played, you know, he could take it over Antonio Brown because he's played, you know, an extra 5 years. I'd give him that. And I probably might say Calvin Johnson because he's probably played a little bit longer than Antonio Brown too. You might give Calvin Johnson. Look, Calvin Johnson was the number one guy for a long time. You don't get the nickname Megatron because you're not great. So I think it's, you know, pick who you want of those three guys. The reason the argument against Antonio Brown would just be longevity. Now, longevity may match Calvin Johnson now. I think Antonio Brown's probably got another year or two to match. Calvin Johnson played, what, 8, 9 years?
Oh, how long did he play? Let's see here. He was 2007 to 2015.
Yeah, so 9 years. So, okay. So, and Antonio Brown's what? Is he going into his ninth year? What is it? I don't even know.
He was 2010.
So he's going into his ninth year. So, yeah. So Calvin Johnson, Antonio Brown, flip a coin. Larry Fitzgerald, maybe longevity gives him an edge. But pick any one of the three. Hard to argue against any of them.
Who's made I think you can make a strong argument for Larry Fitzgerald right now, but you know, and look, we obviously focus on the Steelers and watch the Steelers week in, week out. But I mean, has any wide receiver in the league since, you know, 2008 made more of the clutch catches in key moments of games than Antonio Brown?
You know, again, the Lions didn't play as many big games, so hard to give it to Calvin Johnson. But Larry Fitzgerald's made a lot of big catches. I'll flip coins. Obviously today you take Antonio Brown, and you probably say the answer is going to be Antonio Brown because of his ability to stay on the field and the fact that he doesn't look like he's declined at all. It only gotten better, maybe. So, you know, Antonio Brown, if he continues to do what he's done for two or three more years, I mean, he's probably a Hall of Famer right now.
And that was going to be my next question. If he never played another down right now, would he be in the Hall of Fame?
The only reason I would hesitate is there's so many damn good receivers these days that they're looking for reasons not to put guys in. You know, you got, you know, look, Hines Ward. I've said all along, I don't think Hines Ward's getting in the Hall of Fame, but, you know.
Here's the thing. How much does the way the game has changed, especially, you know, I mean, offense has a huge advantage now versus some of these guys, you know, waiting to try to get in, you know, some of these receivers on the all-time reception and receiving yardage list, you know. The game has just, you know, changed. I mean, even since Brown came into the league in 2010, you know, it's just become such a different game. Now, something in Brown's credit here, I mean, you know, you look at it, you look back and think back to his career. How many of Brown's receptions were with him less than five yards past the line of scrimmage? You know, I mean, it's not like we're talking about a guy that's made a living off of bubble screens and quick slants. Now, he's had his share of them, don't get me wrong, but I mean, a lot of AB's catches have come eight. I would think that'd be a good study to do. You know, a lot of his catches, I would think 8, 9, 10 yards, you know, or more down the field. You know, so.
I think that's a good point. I think the fact is, guys, you know, you don't necessarily want to press him because you blow by you. And if you lay off him, you can throw that stuff, you know, particularly that slant that they've run so effectively for so many years. I mean, that's the thing. That's what makes him great, is he's not a one-trick pony. He can run all the routes. He can do all the things. He's elusive as hell with the ball in his hands. I mean, that's why we're talking about him being in the Hall of Fame, because he can do it all.
So, I mean, there would be it would be debatable, though.
I mean, debatable leaning, yes. Yeah. Because, you know, there would also be – I mean, this is kind of cheating a little bit, but you're saying if he never played again, well, obviously something dramatic would have happened, and so everybody would understand. I mean, no, he could walk away. Obviously, he's not walking away. I mean, Calvin Johnson walked away. I would assume Calvin Johnson – I mean, that's your template. Is Calvin Johnson getting in the Hall of Fame? I would assume so.
I would think so, but man, 10,581 yard. Well, that was since 2008. Calvin Johnson actually registered 11,619 receiving yards. He had, believe it or not, he only had 700. I say only. I don't know. Is he a slam dunk, David? 731 career catches.
I mean, he's a slam dunk. The argument against is he didn't play long enough. And this is the Terrell Davis argument. So,
Well, here's something, too. How many 100 – hopefully you're not looking at this. How many?
I've not pulled up any stats today.
How many seasons
100
did –
100-catch seasons? Well, I can do the math, right? You told me he played 9 years and he has 700-some catches. So not many. I would guess two.
One. One 100 catch season for Calvin Johnson, and only one other over 88.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe, you know, that's for the naysayers. That's good ammo.
You know, I mean, if he would have played longer and had a Yeah, it's gonna be a good debate come time, because definitely, look, I mean, you're gonna have this log jam of wide receivers trying to get in the in the Hall of Fame isn't going to go away anytime soon, right? You know, so
No, you're right. It isn't going away. It's only gonna be forever.
You know, and will the dawn of stats, you know, being, you know, of stats exploration end up helping, you know, a few of these guys?
That's a good question. I think this is where the voters, and, you know, we've got to remember, this is something that this is voted on by a small cadre of
older,
you know,
sports
old
writers.
Old white sports writers. I mean, it's really what it is. I mean, it's you know, it's not great. It is what it is, and I think the eye test matters, and I think that, you know, Calvin Johnson's going to win on the eye test for sure.
Yeah, on the eye test, but I mean, potentially. Anyway, it's a good debate, and it's interesting that you consider the generation, you know, basically 10 years, so, you know, 2008, that's as part of my post. You know, I went back to 2008 to kind of frame it like that. If Antonio Brown has a 100-yard reception season in 2018, along with another, you know, whatever, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400, whatever yards, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 touchdowns, and the Steelers win the Super Bowl, is he slam dunk then?
Yeah. I mean, sure.
Yeah, I would.
He might be slam dunk already. So, yeah,
Here's the thing. Guys like Larry Fitzgerald, Brandon Marshall, Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant, none of them have Super Bowl rings.
Right. Right. That's a good point.
You know, and really, I mentioned Jordy Nelson in my post, but you'll be hard pressed, even, you know, people listening to this podcast and probably NFL fans in general, anybody make an argument that Jordy Nelson's going to end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I mean, he has had a nice career, and, you know, he does have a Super Bowl ring, but I think it's just going to end at that. He's just one of those receivers that had a good career, and Dez Bryant's probably going to fall in that category as well.
I think Dez is going to get it. I'd like to match up Dez and Terrell Owens and see how their numbers match up. You're right about Jordy and him losing that season, getting hurt, you know, probably if he had a chance, you know, that had to not happen. Unfortunately, it did happen.
Guess, I want you to guess how many career receptions Dez Bryant currently has. Ding, ding,
six,
ding.
Six, 660.
Lower than that.
Oh, he ain't getting in. He's not getting in then. He said, okay, I take it back. Really? Lower. I mean, I assume he's over 600, right? No? Wow. Well, he's not getting in then.
531 career receptions.
Yeah. So how long has he been in the league? Since when?
Came into the league same year as Antonio Brown, 2000.
Did he go to Oklahoma State?
Yeah, he was Oklahoma State. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you're not getting in.
Will James Washington? I'm gonna run you quickly back down a rabbit hole and back up. Will James Washington have more career receptions in the NFL than Dez Bryant currently has now? 530.
Not a chance in hell.
No way, huh?
If you ask me just about any player. I mean, you can take any – if you ask me any guy in the draft, I'm sure there will be a guy who catches 500 balls, but I would guess no on all of them.
How many seasons?
Just the odds. I would just guess no on all of them.
Let's see. Dez has played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons, 531 receptions. That's average of 66 receptions a season.
Yeah, that's a very good career. Somebody will do it. But if you, what was James Washington? What was he? What number receiver was he drafted? You think seventh, eighth, something like that? I mean, if you gave me the top 10 guys, I'd still probably bet no on all of them.
How many receivers did go? I mean, before, let's see, you had. Remember there it was late for receivers this year. I mean, there wasn't this year's crop of wide receivers, at least on paper, the top ones. This year's class wasn't all that. DJ Moore went to the Panthers in the first round. Calvin Ridley went to the Falcons in the first round. Cortland Sutton went second round to the Broncos. Dante Pettis went to the 49ers in the second round. Christian Kirk went to the Cardinals in the second round. Anthony Miller out of Memphis went to the Bears in the second round. And then James Washington went to the Steelers.
So he was seventh. So every one of those guys had bet under 500. But I'm sure one or two of them will do better. But, if I got to make seven bets on over under 500 catches, I'd be comfortable betting under on all seven. And I just assume I'd lose one or two.
All right. Did we up out of the rabbit hole we come? Did we?
Yeah, the wide receiver rabbit hole.
Did we beat that up pretty good?
Yeah, good. That was good. All right.
Here's something else for you, David, that I'm currently in the process of researching, and I teased it a little bit on Twitter. So before we got on, so I know you probably already saw the question. Hopefully, you didn't do your homework.
I didn't because I was out last night, and this morning I was busy doing stuff, as you know, and I just saw that you were going to ask me something, so I didn't look.
All right. Last season, how many offensive plays in total, not counting penalties and all like that, in 2017, how many offensive plays did the Steelers run in 2017 with their starting line, offensive linemen, all five starting linemen, talk about Villanueva, Foster, Pouncey, DeCastro, and Marcus Gilbert, along with Ben, Bell, and Brown?
Well, the answer is more or less, how many plays did Gilbert play almost? Because he missed a surprising – I think he only played about 30% of the offensive snaps. So that's the answer to the question. And then you take out, week 17. Maybe you take out the Texans game.
Remember, AB was sidelined from first half of the Patriots game on.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess it's going to be like the first 2 weeks of the season. It's going to be 160.
That's a pretty decent guess. It's actually low. It's actually too low, according to now. None of these are official. I'm still digging through some of our charting and want to verify. But I know my number is going to be close. 182.
Get gold star for me. Give me a gold star on the forehead.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I mean, you had the process of eliminating. I mean, because look,
yeah, Gilbert, that's why I get paid to do this.
Yeah, paid poorly. I'm paid poorly to do it.
Paid nothing to do this.
When you think about, I mean, Gilbert obviously missed a early portion of the season with the hamstring injury, and then.
I had forgotten, you know, I was the reason I hit it is I was reading an interview that Caboli did with Marcus Gilbert, and you know, maybe it was an article about Chooks, and you know, I had forgotten that Gilbert actually, you know, I knew the suspension part that he missed the four games, and I knew he had the hamstring, but I was surprised how little he actually played.
Yeah, he hurt his hamstring and then came back and injured it again and missed some more time. And yeah, don't forget, Foster missed a little bit of – missed some snaps last season. Then, as you said, the Week 17 game. And then, of course, Antonio Brown missing – you know, you got to throw out the last several weeks of the season altogether because Antonio Brown, you know, has suffered his injury there. 182 snaps. Now, obviously, injuries throughout the season are going to happen, and for a team to keep an offensive line intact, or for an offensive line to play 50, a starting offensive line to play 50% of the snaps, I mean, that's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, would you bet?
Yeah, I think it was. You know, it feels like it was. You know, people point this out all the time. You know, obviously, Joe Thomas was the poster boy for a guy never missing a snap. And you know, we see teams, this is one of the things is I think there's a misperception that offensive linemen get hurt all the time. This would be a good thing to try to study. You know, what position groups get hurt the most? And my initial reaction would be kind of running backs and linebackers. I have no idea if that's right. No idea. I would think, you know, and the Steelers aren't a great case study because their offensive linemen have stayed relatively healthy over the past. They didn't stay healthy for a long time. They always had issues through the Cowher years and into the early Tomlin years. But the last 5 years, it feels like they've stayed mostly healthy, whereas the defensive linemen haven't stayed. It feels like they haven't stayed mostly healthy. But I don't have any empirical data to defend my arguments at all. I'm just going on. I'm guessing on what I remember.
Yeah, and games missed would be kind of a flawed stat because I think you need to trigger it more towards starters.
Right, right.
You know, because, you know, it'd be, you know, a number four wide receiver, you know, missing a game with a hamstring injury, maybe he's going to be inactive anyway, you know?
What's your guess? What position group would you guess – gets hurt the most?
Man, I would say linemen, both offensive and defensive, probably, because I mean, it's, you know, you're right there in
physical every play.
Physical every play, and so many bodies stacked on top of each other, you know.
Yeah.
And I have no idea. I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, that's at least it's a logical answer. Yeah, I said running backs because the pounding they take and the. And, you know, maybe it's more marquee, so when a guy gets hurt, you're obviously always aware of it. Whereas if, you know, the right guard for the Bears isn't starting next week, you may or may not, you know, we may read it, but it's not going to register necessarily. So, yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm, you know, John Clayton probably has that information. He's probably done a study on that.
Now, my point, I'm not yet sure what point I'm trying to make with the offensive plays and the starting five and Ben and Bell and Brown, but I'm going to look at that statistically from a successful play portion. And look, I mean, make no mistake about it, Chris Hubbard played well, you know, replacing Marcus Gilbert last year. So, you know, I don't think you can isolate just that. you know. But I mean, AB obviously did miss some time, and on. Here's the funny thing: of those 182 snaps, Roosevelt Nix was on the field for 10 of them. So, and then, and then, what was something else that jumped out me out at me? I think Juju was only on the field for like 66 of those snaps, something.
Yeah, that makes sense because a lot of those were early in the season and he was playing less early in the season.
So, yeah, I guess the point I was trying to – I do have the raw – guess how many – I pulled the kind of the raw numbers for the same stat from 2016. Care to make – and I know you're not going to have any, you know, think jump to your top of your head. Guess what the number was with all five starting offensive linemen, Ben, Bell, and Brown in 2016 season?
I can't remember all Le'Veon Bell's injuries and suspensions. So I'm guessing 350.
That's pretty damn good. I'm impressed. 373.
No chumps here, man. Get paid big money.
Yeah, not a bad. Now, like I said, these numbers aren't official. I pulled them out of some raw numbers here, but they're going to be extremely close. I guess what I'm getting at is, boy, it sure would be nice to keep this offensive line, Ben, AB, and Bell on the field. It'd be good to see that group hit maybe the 500 number this year and see what this offense can produce. And, you know, let's not, you know, we could add in, well, what about Vance McDonald? Because, look, I don't know about you. I think Vance McDonald's going to have a career year this year, David.
I know he's on your wall in the bedroom, so.
Yeah, I don't think you can buy a fat head of him just yet. I'll have to look into that with him. But you know, that's just one of the aspects that make you look back at last season and say and go, "Who? Here's something else." You know, that kind of jumped out to me. And I bet you didn't even remember this during the playoff game against the Jaguars. Marcus Gilbert left that game with a concussion. Do you remember that? In the first quarter, I think.
Now that you say it, but I wouldn't have gotten it if you didn't trigger it.
And you know, in a roundabout way, look, I mean, there's no doubt about it that big things are expected from the Steelers offense in 2018, right?
Yep.
All right.
Have been for 5 years. I mean, the story hasn't changed.
Right. Not a huge, like I said, this isn't a huge talking point. Just something that jumped out of me with playing with some data this morning with the offensive plays, and I'm going to write something up about it a little bit later, especially when it comes to successful play rate and how that unit did. Okay, moving on here. Dwight Clark passed away yesterday.
Yeah, Dave. And you know, sad story, ALS, right?
ALS.
I mean, he's got, you know, they had an event for him recently, and unfortunately, when you have these types of events, it's foreshadowing, you know, for lack of a better term, impending doom. And I think the guys knew that, you know, you have a disease like this, they can put it, they put time frames on it, and I think people knew. I think they've known for a couple of years now that, you know, he had his disease was going to be terminal. And I think the nice thing is, if there's anything nice about this, is I think a lot of people cared about Dwight Clark and have very fond memories, and they get a chance to say their goodbyes. And, you know, as morose as that is a bit, maybe that was, you know, one of the positives. But anybody who's a football fan remembers, you know, the other guys who played with Jerry Rice, and Dwight Clark is a notable guy, and, you know, probably one of the iconic plays. I mean, the Immaculate Reception is maybe the most iconic play in the NFL history, but if it's not, the catch is probably the answer. So it's right there without any of them.
Do you vividly remember pulling the catch issue of Sports Illustrated out of the mailbox?
I mean, I don't remember the moment per se, but, you know, Thursdays were – you know, when I thought of Thursdays as a kid, I meant that was the day, you know, get home and get the mail, or, you know, get the SI issue. That was the first thing.
But you definitely can picture that cover.
Sure, sure. You know, absolutely. The shot from behind in the end zone.
Right. Yep. Yeah, just one of those iconic, especially for you and I in our 50s, you know, for kind of our, I guess, adolescence, if you will. But, yeah, I mean, that first thing that came to mind was that Sports Illustrated cover when only 61. For some reason, I thought he was older than that. But 61, that's young. Okay, one final note. Michael Kendricks finally has a new home, and it's with the Cleveland Browns, a one-year deal, $3-point-something million.
$3.5 million, yeah. And the number was, you know, I tweeted about it the other day. I said it'd be interesting to see what he gets. I would assume it's going to be $4 to $4.5 million, maybe less. This is a huge win for the Browns, you know, put him in there with Jamie Collins. And all of a sudden, you know, it's just another look. Let's not make Michael Kendricks into a Pro Bowler or, you know, an all pro. He's not. But he's an athletic linebacker that's comes cheap. The Browns have cash and they add another decent football player to their team. So good for them. It's good signing.
He gets the 1 year prove it deal on top of it, puts a little bit of cash back in his pocket. You know, are you as bent out of shape the Steelers didn't sign him as a lot of the fan base is?
No, look, I mean, look, I imagine the Steelers had a conversation with the Eagles.
They weren't going to trade for that salary or that contract.
No way. They're not trading for $6 million, $6.5 million, whatever it was.
Even though it looked good on paper when I wrote about it back in March, you know.
Look, John Bostic, Michael Kendricks, if you asked me 2-3 months ago to pick one or the other for a season, I probably would have picked Kendricks. But flip a coin. I mean, flip a coin. Bostic's a little bit older. He's had a little bit more of an injury history. That's, you know, I think he's a little older. Am I right on that? Maybe they're the same age. But you know, he's had a little bit of an injury history, but maybe he's more versatile today than Kendricks is. And if he can stay healthy, maybe he turns out the better player. But I wouldn't bet on one guy or the other clearly being the better player. I don't think it's, and once you've signed one, you know, then you're asking about Vince Williams. And the idea that Tyler Matakevich is going to be the starter, something went wrong if Tyler Matakevich is the starter. It's not a knock on Tyler Matakevich. They signed Bostic to be the starter, so let's be, you know, straight up about that.
Here's the thing that I think everybody needs to think about when it comes to Kendricks. He was probably destined to sign a one-year deal somewhere, and a one-year deal only, because no team was going to pay him per season what he was set to make with the Eagles. If he signed a two-year deal, you know, he might have at best pocketed another million and a half,
yeah. Because, you know, the two-year deal, he makes more money, but the risk of getting cut. So, look, he has a good season.
And that two-year deal, he's locked into probably a very, very reasonable salary in the second year.
Right. Look, he's hoping next year to get John Bostic's contract that he got this year, or maybe a little bit more.
I would think more, because Bostic only got two for six, right?
Six for two, right?
Well, I mean, what did I say?
Two for six. $6 million for 2 years, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's what Kendricks is hoping to get. Look, I don't think Michael Kendricks is ever going to have a salary over $5 million a year going forward. That would just be my bet. So anything he gets above three going, you know, and then he gets more of it guaranteed, that's good. But he's probably playing. He's probably kind of a, like Bostic, he's probably a $3 to $4 million player at best going forward.
I'm sorry. 2 year, $4 million for Bostic. I knew that number. I knew that number didn't sound right in my head for some reason. Two years, $4 million for Bostic.
Yeah, so maybe you're right. So $6 million. He's a $3 to $4 million player a year going forward at best.
Well, the thing is if Bostic stays healthy for a full year will Bostic have a career year? In 2018,
I'd have to go back and look at his years.
I mean, he's obviously, you know, he's had the injuries and
he's got he's got a chance to be in the middle of a team, central defender on a team that hopefully the defense is improved and one of the better defenses in the league. So everything would line up. Look, he's in a good spot, put it that way.
His career high in total tackles was obviously, I think, last year. With the he had 57, he was in on 57 tackles and 40 assists. So that's what, 97?
Yeah, look, if he's that should be his number. His number should be 100 tackles this year, right? If he's playing 60%, 60 to 70% of the defensive snaps, if he stays healthy, you know, so he's on the field. Yeah, I would think he's in on 100 tackles. It seems like the right number to me.
You know, fans wanted both Bostic. You know, once Bostic was signed, that took Kendricks right. And you got to remember too, even if the Steelers had whatever kind of contract they may or may not have offered or called about or with Kendricks, is they weren't going to guarantee him a starting spot. You know, I suppose they could have because of what they're paying Bostic, but. I mean, at least Bostic, you know, can give you some special team snaps. I'm not sure. I think Kendricks might think he's kind of above that point right now. I mean, Bostic obviously probably wasn't going to sign a deal with the Vikings or Raiders, even if it was close to what he got from the Browns, if he wasn't kind of given the wink, wink, nod, nod that he was going to, you know, start. So, I understand, what's the word, consternation?
Maybe the consternation gives them a little bit of means they're more right. Disappointment, I think, is the right word.
Will these two need to be measured against each other?
Sure, I mean, you know, why not? You know, see what happens.
But the Browns have done some things this offseason. You know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, how their defense plays out. Because as you say, with Jamie Collins and who's the other one over there? Christian Kirksey, I think, is the other.
Yeah, Kirksey. He got hurt at the end of the season, but he had a good year.
Yeah, he's a good little player, too. And, you know, you throw Kendricks in the middle of that. And Steelers open up the regular season.
It comes back to the quarterback. And look, any team, you want to get them when their quarterback's, you know, whether it's Tyrod Taylor or you know, any organization, whether it's the rookie coming in or the veteran in a new place, you want to play teams where the quarterback's new to the system. So that's the benefit of getting them in week one.
What's your real quick before we wrap things up? What's your thoughts on LJ Fort and where he plays into things this year, or does he?
I'm a fanboy, so I'm an LJ Fort fan. I imagine his role will be similar to as it has been. I think he'll be on the roster. He'd be an important special teams guy. He probably doesn't get any snaps barring injury in the 15 guys we've talked about getting snaps.
You'd like his chances though to make the 53, right?
Yeah, I think he makes the team.
So you think the hype about Matthew Thomas might be kind of overblown, or do you think maybe they keep five inside linebackers?
They could keep five, but I'd be, you know, look, if all things are equal, if it was a dead heat between the rookie and LJ Fort, you take the rookie, right? I mean, if all things are equal, you take the younger guy because you think that if things are equal now, he's got more room to develop. You pretty much know who LJ Fort is. I'm just disappointed. Look, I'm disappointed, as people know if they listen to the podcast. I'm very disappointed that LJ Fort didn't get a shot last year and that Sean Spence was the guy, and Sean Spence remained the guy after it was clear that Sean Spence wasn't the guy. So I wish LJ Fort had gotten a shot, but that tells you – it also tells you something important about what they think about LJ Fort. He didn't get the shot, so they didn't think he was the guy. So it's hard to imagine him having a bigger role. You know, that was his chance to play, and they didn't play him. So he's a special teams guy. He is what he is.
I think the most damning thing about him is the fact that after Shazier and Matakavich, you know, were lost to injuries. Now, obviously, Matakavich you know, played on special teams, but couldn't play on. His injury was serious enough that it prevented him from playing on defense. I think the most damning fact is that you bring a guy in like Sean Spence off the street. Now, Fort still played. I think he played something like 90-something defensive snaps.
Yeah, again, he made a couple plays in the Jacksonville game that I thought were good plays. I mean, you know, he did a few things, but yeah, they brought in a new guy and put him in front of him.
And most of Fort's snaps were in sub package situations, and Sean Spence ended up more than playing the double amount of snaps, you know, than he did. So that would be, Fort in Fort's favor is the fact that he had probably his best season. Well, one of two. He's only had really two seasons with the Steelers. He performed well on special teams. So, you know, I think he had something like nine total, seven solos and two assists or something like that last year. When it came to special teams, so that might be one of his saving graces right there. I'm less optimistic about him making the 53. Than you are, I would tell you that. And the fact that I think he's out of practice squad eligibility, too, and he's going to make, I think, what is it, something like $700,000? Not that it's a huge difference between, you know.
Money's not going to be the decider.
You know, not going to be the decider there. And look, you know, as I've unfortunately said several times already this offseason, these things have a funny way of working themselves out. And one injury at the inside linebacker position could change, you know, a lot of this in roster construction and all like that. But I don't know. I was just thinking about him yesterday, and I wrote up a small little piece on him and whether or not he's going to be a tough out this year during the rest of the summer. Okay, for nothing going on with the Steelers, I think I did a good job of getting us some topics together.
Yeah,
so
we got some good stuff.
Now, I would like to know, am I this generation's best Steelers blogger?
Yes.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer. All right. In the meantime, until Friday, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause and pay David for his
great... Yeah, donate. Who's going to know those snap numbers off the top of their head?
I think you cheated, but okay.
I don't cheat, I promise.
Okay. Go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button upper right navigational bar, and David, go Knights go, and until Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.